Here, interviewing Louise Freund for the Pittsburgh Section National Council of Jewish Women's Oral History Project 2 on May 31st, 1974. Louise, will you tell us about your family's very earliest beginnings?
Well, we have always considered ourselves Pittsburghers, but it was strange that we finally did become Pittsburghers. My mother's father had come to Pittsburgh in 1848 from Heidelberg, and he came to Pittsburgh because the rivers reminded him and the friends that came who came with him of the Rhine River. He left Germany because of the problems for young men there under the influence of Karl Schurz, and he was interested in coming to a reformed place where he could have reformed religion. At the time of the Civil War, he went to the Baltimore, Washington area as a purveyor of cattle for the army. In 1864, he married my grandmother, whose parents had been in Baltimore since early in the 19th century. She refused to come to live in Pittsburgh, and so they stayed in Baltimore, where my mother and father married. Father had been born in Columbia, South America. His father, a German, and his mother of Spanish-French descent, but living in Curacao. Grandfather Freund, who had originally gone to Cincinnati and then to South America as a German consul, I think, went to Detroit about 1880, established a business there, had 12 children, two of whom died in infancy, and he died while my father was at Cornell. Mother had been born in Baltimore, as were her. She was one of six children, and her education was rather interesting. All the girls in the family were educated at Notre Dame Convent in Baltimore, which was a very fine prep school. They went there by carriage from where they lived. It takes about 5 minutes now in an automobile, but it was a good half day's trip, she said, when they went. It was a boarding school. And then she went to Cornell. She was in the class of 1896, but she left Cornell after 2 years because my grandfather was in the type of business where 1 year there was Great Depression and another year there was great wealth. And she hit one of the Depression years, so she left Cornell. She met my father there. They both played the violin. They were married in Baltimore in 1902, and that's where I was born. But the family moved to Edgewood while I was a baby because father had an engineering job with Union Switch and Signal. He was working under George Westinghouse. After 3 or 4 years, they moved to Beaver, a small town about 35 miles west of Pittsburgh, where we lived until 1918. Beaver was a small town, and they lived there because it was more convenient for father's business, which was even further west of Pittsburgh. He commuted every day, sometimes to Pittsburgh and sometimes to the factory. My mother was instrumental in establishing a Montessori kindergarten there in about 1906, so that my sister and I had a place to go for kindergarten.
Which sister, Louise?
Jane. The others were much younger, naturally. In 1918, we migrated, so to speak, all five children and the family to Shady Avenue, where we lived until shortly after my father's death in 1958. The family consisted of, I was the oldest. There were three sisters, Jane, who was married to Donald Stein first and who died in 1962, Anita Morgenstern, and Margaret Adler, who lives in Cleveland. The youngest in the family was my brother Jack, who lives in Pittsburgh. We had a very good family life, I would say. Everybody seemed to get along fairly well. We were very close. Mother and father were very good parents. They had certain ideas about raising children. They would do without many things and make many sacrifices of their time and money so that we could have cultural experiences like concerts and theater. I can remember as a little girl when we lived in Beaver, my father used to bring me to Pittsburgh Saturday afternoons to hear, see people like Maude Adams and Helen Hayes and people like that at the Nixon Theater and the Alvin Theater. And so it was a good young life that we all had.
Didn't the other children in the community come to your home often?
Oh yes, we had open house with it was a big house, and mother preferred having us at home rather than out. And in those days, people's activities revolved around the home. I mean, there were two big living rooms downstairs, and there was always food in the icebox so that we could have something to eat. And it was a place where we congregated, and sometimes my younger sister's friends interfered with me, or my friends interfered with my younger sister's friends, but everybody got along, and it was really a pretty good social life, I would say. There was a great social life in those days. We had formal dances, and very busy during holidays, and it was entirely different from what's going on now with the young people. They decided to educate me at Wellesley, which was wonderful. My father complained bitterly because the tuition was a little bit over $800. He thought that it was terribly expensive. I don't know what he would think of education now, the prices of it anyway.
Where did you go to school here?
Well, here, I went to school in Beaver, and then here, I had gone to private school in Beaver. And my high school education was not good at all, so mother decided that I needed public school, so I went to Shelley High School, which was marvelous then, for 2 years. I then took College Board examinations, formed half of them, and I spent a year with private tutors and all sorts of things, and finally got into Wellesley after 5 years of preparation instead of four. I wasn't very bright at that stage, apparently. Or later either, I guess. I finished Wellesley, and I did some graduate work at the University of Pittsburgh in social work, economics and social work. And then I was a social worker under Harriet Goldman at the Girls Bureau, which was part of the Federation. That was a very good experience. We worked with everybody from girls who needed help in employment or college scholarships, the girls who needed psychiatric care, who were unmarried mothers, who were runaways, who had court records and things of that sort. And it was wonderful work, but it was a little too much emotionally. And so I was in it for about 4 years, I would say. Then I did a lot of volunteer work until about 1938, when I went to the United Employment Service to work with the employment of German refugees. I'd done some work before that with the German refugees for the Council of Jewish Women in finding places for them to live. We rounded up furniture for them, and we worked on adjustment problems with them, so that it was rather interesting.
Would you like to bring your mother in when she was present at
council? Well, my mother had been very active in council, but I've never been active in council. She, when she moved to Pittsburgh, Mrs. Enoch Rao was then president of council. She'd been president of council for, I don't know, 15, 20 years old, from the beginning, I think. And she interested mother in the Council of Jewish Women. The Rao, she had been friendly with my mother's parents, my mother's family, in the early days, because they used to visit back and forth to Pittsburgh, mother's family. And so that she started mother into the council. And mother was then president of the council in 1925 to 1927. She was very active, and she was also on the National Council of the Jewish Women Board for several years, I guess right after that. When she was in the council, I think that she was instrumental in starting Council House, or it was a home that Mrs. Samuel Winehouse established for homeless young girls. It was a wonderful thing, but it was phased out in about, after about 10 years, I think, I'm not sure. And after she was active in council for many years, and then she became active in the Ladies' Hospital Aid, and she was president of Ladies' Hospital Aid in the early 1930s, I believe. She set up the snack bar and the gift shop for the Ladies' Hospital Aid at the hospital, and she was very instrumental in bringing an entirely new group of people into the activities of the Ladies' Hospital Aid. And I think that one of the reasons that that has been such a success is because she interested a new type of person in the Ladies' Hospital Aid at that time. I had always been rather opposed to doing organization work per se. I'd seen too much of it with Mother, and Father had been active in various things, but he had done concrete organization work in the community, federation, and things of that sort. But I did do some work for the Council of Jewish Women, not very much. I'd been very interested and instrumental in starting the Industrial League, which gave employment to women and trained them to do things. It was a fantastic project. I also had worked on the scholarship committee, and in about 1950, I'd had a great deal of experience during the war, which I'll go into later, with volunteers and the training of volunteers, and I set up a training program for the Council of Jewish Women. We trained volunteers who worked at the Arsenal Health Center under Benjamin Spock, who had just come to the university then. He believed in having young medical students work closely with families and children. And we'd had a wonderful project there, and I was very upset just a couple of months ago when I read that that had been phased out and that it wasn't to be continued. It had continued, though, for almost 25 years. It was interesting. In 1941, I became chairman of the Volunteer Bureau of the Civilian Defense, working with the Junior League. We started working the day before Pearl Harbor, so you can imagine the confusion when Pearl Harbor broke. I had an 8 in the morning until 8 o'clock at night job with many nightmares. We secured volunteers for all the social agencies, who were rather hard-pressed for volunteers, and we were also supposed to have the volunteers who were responsible for the civilian defense, the telephone rooms, the army warning system, and all sorts of things. And it was really a great responsibility, a great job, which I adored. And my father insisted that I keep it as a volunteer and not take a regular job, which I wanted to do during the war. So that left me very tired and very allergic to using the telephone for anything. In 1945, I gave that up because there were family problems. My mother was quite ill, and help was difficult and to secure, and I just was tired anyway. My other involvements, aside from the one during the war, were with United Jewish Federation on fundraising and on the planning level after the war, at the time of the need for solving problems for the refugees and raising money for the things that were going on in Israel and in this country.
Do you remember who you worked with in those years at the Federation?
Well, I worked under the Federation in the Women's Division and with the Men's Division, and I was chairman for several years, or vice chairman, or co-chairman, from about 1949 on. And I kept on being active in that until about 1963, when I had to take a year off because I had to have some operations for cataracts on my eyes. And I continued, and I've always been active in it and very interested in the problems and in the work that the Federation did. I was on the original women's board for 21 years. And then I was on the Men's Federation board for several years because I became an ex officio member of the men's board because of the big jobs that I had for fundraising on the women's board. I also was very much involved in the United Fund and the Community Chest and in the Health and Welfare Federation. I was on committees for implementing various projects at the Health and Welfare Federation, particularly the United Mental Health Umbrella Project. And I was vice president of the Health and Welfare Federation for 2 or 3 years. I was also very active in the early fundraising. In 1952, we started the United Fund, and we really had great success and did marvelous things with the United Fund then, and it's very sad that the interest of the community has decreased to a certain extent and that it's had to have its ways of fundraising changed in the last year or two. I've also been very active in worked for the Pittsburgh Symphony Society. I was one of the original members of the women's organization of the Pittsburgh Symphony Society and did a lot of work as a member of the executive committee of the society and in various phases of school concerts, which were a wonderful project that they had, and they were developed so that they were really one of the outstanding projects of that sort in the country, and also in fundraising for the Women's Association's contribution towards the maintenance fund. At that time, the symphony had no endowment fund, and we all worked very hard for it, and it was very interesting and a great deal of fun. I've also been very active in the Women's Golf Association of Western Pennsylvania. During the war, I was treasurer. And they kept us in for 4 years because there was practically no golf during the war. But I was on the board then for 4 or 5 years. And then in 1952 and 53, I was president of the Women's Golf Association of Western Pennsylvania. And then I was on that board for quite a while afterwards. And they were working boards. I mean, we really had a wonderful time and had marvelous associates. And we did a lot to develop young golfers, and it was good work. Around the last few years, I have sort of slowed down on volunteer work. I've done a few things. I've been active in the school volunteers program. I'm still active in the symphony. I've done some work on civil rights and civic and national problems that I've been very much interested in. And I keep busy on things of that sort.
Louise, will you tell us a little about the school at Madison School, something I know about too?
Well, that's, we've worked on that program now for about 6 years, I think. And we have a rather small group. It's being done through the sisterhood of the Rhoda Sholem Temple, which is the only thing that I've really done except some bookbinding for the sisterhood, although my grandfather in 1856 was one of the founders of the Rhoda Sholem Temple before he moved to Baltimore. But that program, we have a few volunteers, and we work with children on a one-to-one basis. We're not teaching them so much, I don't think, or I do think we're not teaching them very much. But we're giving them a relationship which they seem to enjoy and which most of the volunteers enjoy. They look forward to having a half an hour, 40 minutes with us once a week, and the teachers feel that it's a good program. It's a program that's developed tremendously in the Pittsburgh area. There are over 1,000 people in the school volunteer area, I think, aren't there, Ellie?
Nearly 900 this year.
And it's... we're hoping that next year we'll be able to develop it into something a little bigger. I know that now there's great comment and great interest in the problems of the assimilation of the Jewish community into the non-Jewish community. I've never been very conscious of this because my background until I was 16 years old was not a Jewish background. We had lived in the small community Beaver where there was one other Jewish family, the Taylor. And one of the reasons that we moved to Pittsburgh was because my parents felt that we should have Jewish education, not too much, because they were rather one thing that they were quite remiss about, and that we should associate with Jewish people. My background in Beaver, religiously, was rather interesting. We went to a Methodist Sunday school to learn New Testament that was taught by a Quaker friend of my mother's, and that was the extent of my Jewish education. When we moved to Pittsburgh, I was going to the confirmation class, but I had pneumonia that year, and I was sick, and I couldn't go.
Slow.
And I discussed it with Dr. Goldenson, who had just come to Pittsburgh, and we agreed that I could not honestly take the vows of Judaism without any Jewish education and background, and so I was not confirmed. This is something that I feel showed an honest attitude on my part and a wonderful attitude on Dr. Goldenson's part. When I went to college, I took a very fine course in Bible at Wellesley and in the New Testament and the Old Testament, and I think that I developed a very good moral background, and I was also influenced in that by going to hear Dr. Goldenson at Temple and he and his lectures and things of that sort, and I think that a moral background was developed, but not a Jewish background for me. The people that I associated with during the war, I worked closely with the Junior League, and I was really a sort of an ex officio member almost of the Junior League at that time. We were very close, all of us, and we felt the responsibility of what we were doing during the war. And I never felt that there was any prejudice or any problem because I was Jewish. The same thing happened in my contacts with the Golf Association and with the Symphony Association and the Community Chest. I know that I was one of the reasons that I was put on the chest and the federation boards and that sort of thing was because they had to have some Jewish representation. And I was always happy that it seemed to be felt that I was an adequate person to represent some of the Jewish women. The limitations in my Jewish education were something that I have felt very strongly. And I never really had a chance to learn too much about Jewish history and that sort of thing until about 1960, when I became much more interested and I learned a lot. And I think that all of us are very aware of the interest that the community has in Jewish problems now, and that we are all aware of the fact that there is not so much Jewish prejudice. I don't feel there is anyway. I'm sure that there are people who feel that there is a lot of anti-Semitism, but I've never felt that way. I've never come up against it, and I think that with the problems of the world developing as they are, that in the United States, that's one of the things that we have been able to accomplish, an acceptance of the Jewish problems and Judaism, and that all the work that so many of us have done with non-Jewish people in the community has helped that. In spite of a feeling of assimilation that I have, Israel is a very vital part of my life. the work that I did for Federation and for the Women's Division has intensified that. I've never been a Zionist, but I feel very strongly that the State of Israel is most important, that it has to be supported, that it must be allowed to continue, and that we must do as much as we can on a sacrificial basis to help it to continue. After all, I was very fortunate that my grandparents on all sides left Germany almost a century before Hitler. Otherwise, I would have been a German refugee. And I'm sure that I wouldn't have had the advantages that I've had all these years in this country, although they've had many advantages since they've come here. But Israel is very important. It's very vital. We have to recognize its existence, and we have to work for its existence. And I think that that is important. As we learn Jewish history, and I learned Jewish history because we had classes for 3 or 4 years. Kitty taught a small group of us Jewish history. She was a great student of Jewish history. And we learned so much that we've never known, I learned so much that I'd never known before, because the history part has to be tied in with study of the Bible. And it really made a better Jew, made me a better Jew, and made me identify myself more as a Jew than I ever had before about 1960, I would say. I always knew I was Jew. I never concealed the fact that I was a Jew in my relationships with other people. But I don't think that I was as identified with Judaism and with Israel and the causes that you worked for then as I am now.
Thank you so much, Louise. It was a most interesting take.